This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. Welcome, friend, to our weekly garden party. We hope you brought along your questions, because it's time to dish the dirt. On The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, and exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Oh, stepped right on his throat. Oh, gosh, I'm sorry about
you
that,
heard
Paul.
Him choke.
Yeah. I was just trying to interject that her ever faithful servant, Franklin Proctor, is here in the guise of the sous chef of the garden.
The
undergardener. That's exactly.
Oh, yeah.
Well, good morning, everybody.
And
welcome.
Good morning on this gray day. Welcome
to
October.
Well, I'm trying to sound cheery because, you know, it's anything but cheery out there, isn't it?
True. I just saw somebody go by with an umbrella, so I guess it has started to rain now.
Yo.
But you know what? It's been gray, and I kept expecting it to be raining on and off all week.
Yeah.
But it was pretty dry at my place.
Yeah.
I put grass seed down last Sunday and thought, oh, great, I'm not going to have to water it. But there I was out watering it.
Yeah, well, there you are.
So, you know, yeah,
so it's a good time to do that, broadcast a little grass seed?
Definitely. Definitely.
Okay.
Great time to, you know, thicken up your lawns. We can get into that after you do
absolutely.
The important numbers.
The important numbers are thus. If you're calling from the Toronto area, 416-360-0740, and anywhere in the province, it's toll-free, 1-866-740-4740. Call early, call often, one question per call. Gives everybody a fair shot at Charlie's wisdom, you see. And then, of course, if you're a first-time caller, let Sebastian know, and when you come to the air, that's what you'll earn. Your wings!
You'll earn.
Yeah.
I love it.
All right, Charlie, you usually have a whole whack of stuff for us.
Well, thank you very much. And as I said, welcome to October.
Yep.
Today is the first day.
Exactly.
Tomorrow is the first day of Rosh Hashanah.
Right, yes.
So, Shana Tova to all of our listeners. And I just want to give a big hug over the airwaves to Paul Zammit, the director of horticulture from the Toronto Botanical Gardens. He came to Whitby, to my class, my Durham College students. Enjoyed him thoroughly as he did his usual enthusiastic.
He is one of the most energetic, enthusiastic people I think I've ever met.
That's right. And he was just full of, all kinds of great ideas and suggestions and beautiful, you know, different photos were up on the screen and I could hear all these intakes of breath. And he's like, wow. So it was good. He was really good. So thank you, Paul. Really appreciated that. Coming up. Wednesday, October the 12th, the Burlington Horticultural Society is holding a general meeting at the Burlington Senior Center, 2285 New Street at Drury Lane. The speaker is landscape designer Wolf Bonham, and he's going to be speaking about the lush gardens of Central America. Pumpkin pie will be served. Better put that date in your calendar. And there will be a draw. Of course, all are welcome. Now, remember, there are still lots going on at the Toronto Botanical Gardens, despite the fact that it is October. Beautiful plants, great opportunity to see fall colors and fall combinations of perennials and shrubs and trees. So, you know, not necessarily in the rain, but, you know, go out when it's not raining. There's still the Organic Farmers Market going on every Thursday, free garden tours, book clubs, floral design studios, and more. Check out what's going on at the Toronto Botanical Gardens by going to their website, torontobotanicalgarden.ca, and look in the events page for things you might want to get involved in. And, you know, given that it's the seasons are changing, I did go to the old Farmer's Almanac.
Oh, yes.
Because though the almanac isn't 100%, it is better than 50% when it comes to forecasting. And frankly, I don't know if we can really say that about our meteorologists that we listen to.
We can't let them off of too
much. I'm not so sure they're better than 50% with any, you know, consistency. And the Farmer's Almanac people have been doing this for, you know, more than 100 years. So actually, it's over 150 years, 65% correct. So here's what the almanac says for October. Our temperatures are going to be above average in southern Ontario, about 4 degrees above average, so a little bit on the warm side. Precipitation is going to be very average. with kind of a breakdown of the first week that we're in now, a few showers and cool. The following week, several showers but warm. By the third week, we're into sunny and warm. And then for the last week leading up to Halloween, showers, then flurries turning cold.
Whoa. Flurries at the end of October.
That's what it says.
Yikes.
It's kind of like for Halloween. I always feel the kids.
Yeah.
Remember, my kids were little. You just prayed for a nice weather on Halloween.
Exactly.
And invariably it wasn't. It was like, you know, raining and snowing.
Everybody putting on rain gear over top of their
costumes. Winter coats and everything. Yeah. So in November, temperatures are going to be below average. About 1 degree below average. Precipitation, again, will be below average. So, you know, we are looking at snow showers and cold and flurries and all kinds of wonderful
weather. All part of being Canadian, don't you think?
Yeah. But that's not till November. So we'll just work with October for now.
Okay. Well, we're going to take a little bit of a break here, Charlie, and let you get geared up and set to go on this Saturday morning from Zoomer Radio, The Garden Show, with Charlie Dobbin, Frank Proctor here along for the ride, and we'll be back right after these words.
Daffodils and daisies, bluebells and begonias, forsythia and foxgloves, marigolds, magnolia, lavender and lupins, dahlias, delphiniums, stocks, fox, hollyhocks, tulips and sweet williams.
You've picked the right place for everything floral. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
And right off the bat, Charlie, we're going to be taking a little run toward Mississauga. And there's
Excellent.
Lynn. Hi, good morning, Lynn. Welcome to the show.
Oh, hi. Good morning, Frank and Charlie.
Good morning.
I had a question about a plant I bought in the spring, and I wanted to know if it was an annual or a perennial, because it didn't say on the ticket. It's called Sanvitalia.
Oh, yeah.
And it has little tiny yellow flowers. It said it was a hybrid, so I wasn't sure if I can bring it in, if it's an annual, and save it.
As far as I know, it is an annual. The tag, because it depends where we live, it's like a what we would call a tender perennial. So if you lived in South Carolina, Georgia, it would be a perennial. But here, it would be an annual. So if you want to keep that plant alive, you are going to have to bring that in.
Okay, and do I need to just water it? And I shouldn't fertilize it in the winter, I guess.
No, it's going to slow down, as all plants do at this time of year. So let it just do its thing. Is it in a pot? I imagine it is, right?
No, it's out in the garden still. I haven't brought it in yet or done anything with it because I wasn't sure if I could leave it out. But I will bring it in because I had never seen it before, and I thought it was so pretty, and it bloomed all summer long.
Yeah, and that's usually a giveaway that a plant is an annual.
Okay.
When a plant blooms nonstop, that's annual flower behavior. Perennials, in our world, perennials rarely, well, they just don't bloom all summer.
Okay.
They sometimes bloom sporadically on and off. So Sanvitalia procumbens is the proper name. It is an annual. And so it's considered zony, hardy from zones 2 to 11. So, yeah, it's just not going to survive here.
What zone are we actually?
We're in 5, but this is from the Missouri Botanical Garden, so that's an American zone. It says 2 to 11. But it's a very low-growing, creeping, what do they call it, creeping zinnia or something is what it's commonly called. You can try and keep it alive in your home. You're going to give it lots and lots of sun. You're going to allow it to dry between waterings. You will probably want to do some cleaning up and pruning on it by February, March, so early spring, in preparation to take it outside once we're frost-free.
Okay, great.
Okay.
Good.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining
calling.
Us, Lynn. And I'm going to get my bell-ringing arm in shape because, just a minute, Oma in Toronto, that's for you. Welcome to the show, first-time caller.
Yeah, hello. Hello, Charlie. Hello, Frank.
Good
hello.
Morning.
I have grown raspberries for many years and always wondered when I came to pruning if I'm doing the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
This year, however, my raspberries weren't very good at all.
Uh-huh.
I think that may have something to do with the little snow in the winter, and I didn't pay much attention to it in the springtime. They had a lot of flowers on, but when it came to fruiting, they didn't mature.
Okay, so lots of flowers, but not lots of fruit.
Yeah, they set the fruit on, but then they didn't mature. It was very disappointing. And the other thing, when it comes to pruning, what I have done in the past, I usually take the the brown stalk that have carried fruit.
Mm-hmm.
Last is I hope that is the correct.
Yeah, no, that's right. Yep.
And but some are not. Some of them are green.
Mm-hmm.
That I leave those, and they seem to have some which I call sidearms or side shoots coming out. Should I take those off or leave them? For the ones that I think probably stay for next year, because they didn't turn brown.
Right. Yeah, because you're absolutely right. Raspberries are like a two-year crop.
Yeah.
So the cane will grow for 1 year. It will often set buds, but of course you won't see flowering until the following year. And it's once they've flowered and fruited that we then prune them back in the fall, typically. I think probably one of the biggest things when you said you had a low quality or quantity of raspberries this year could just be something as simple as how important thinning is. To keep to really get a good crop of raspberries, you do need to prune them, as you recognize, and they do need to be thinned, because otherwise you get a lot of shading going on, and your crop will be much reduced as a result of too much crowding in the patch. So it's a very effective way to avoid such a poor crop.
Is there possibly
the brown stalks is the proper way to do in the fall?
Yes, it is. Do you have access to the internet?
No.
Okay, because there's a Fine Gardening is a very good magazine. It's out of the United States, but it's an excellent magazine called Fine Gardening. They would probably have it at your local library. there's a good little article called, it's in issue 144, Pruning Red Raspberries, and they do a great job of showing photos and, you know, when to prune, how to prune, explaining it all. But like I said, Canadian Gardening would have done.
On the internet, the kids all have.
There you go. Ask one of your kids to print this off for you. It's just under Fine Gardening.
The other problem I have about raspberries is I have a lot of them coming, quite a few of them come, but have these long stems, and it doesn't seem, they don't seem to have any fruit on it. Are those wild ones? Should I get rid of the whole plant or just cut it back?
Well, if it
doesn't seem to very, very, very long.
Right.
They look healthy.
Yeah, and yet they just get bigger and bigger and no flowers.
Yeah.
I would probably trim them back because they're going to be hard to get through the patch, right? You've got to remember that you've got to make raspberries accessible.
Well, I have mine in a long fence, so that is not really, that wouldn't be really a problem.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, I'd cut back if they're not ever flowering, then definitely trim them back, and you will get some side shoots when you do that, which is not necessarily a bad thing. And keep an eye, like you said, once they've bloomed and fruited, they get trimmed right down, and then we get fresh coming up next spring with, you know, fingers crossed that we're going to get lots more fruit.
Now, is it also a good idea to give them some manure now in the fall?
Yeah, I was just going to say, don't forget to top dress. You could do it now or you could do it in the spring, whichever time works better for you. But definitely amending the soil is a great idea.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Those kind of things in the fall.
Yeah. Oh, it's fine. Good stuff.
Alrighty,
thanks,
Oma.
Oma.
Everything starts at once.
Yeah.
We have to move along, Oma, okay? But thank you very much for a first-time caller. And don't be a stranger. The door's always open. And we'll be along to talk to Bob in Don Mills, as well as several other folks who are waiting online, just after these words on Zoomer Radio.
Don't change stations just because the weather changes. Garden tips and advice all year round. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Well, let's see, Charlie, we're off now to Don Mills. There's Bob. Welcome to the show, Bob. Hello, Bob.
Hi.
Good morning.
There you are.
Okay, great. We have a wealth of Kimberley ferns. Our neighbor just moved and said, we'd just like some ferns.
Mm-hmm.
And we have five large pots about 12 inches deep and 16 inches wide. And these things get about 24 to 28 inches high.
Mm-hmm.
And we're wondering, apparently they're from Australia, and we're wondering, they're too big to bring inside. Could we winter them outside?
No, not outside. They'll die.
They'll die.
But if there's any possibility, you can bring them inside and winter them in reasonable shape so that you can put them out again next year. I mean, particularly if you have a nice, like a porch, a shady porch or, along a wall or somewhere, because they do prefer at the most half-day sun and shade.
Mm-hmm.
But they are a fairly pricey item. The size that you're talking about, those, retail anywhere from $30 to $40 each. So, yeah, exactly. So if you could keep those going, they would be worth having for the future.
We might have an indoor terrarium. You never know.
There you go. Yeah, and it's not like you have to go in a super sunny window with them, but you do want to get them into the shade now, if they're not already in the shade. Get them into out of the wind, into the shade for the next week or so, and then just a real thorough cleaning and watering and washing off of any debris before they go in the house perhaps by next weekend.
Thank you so much.
All right. Good luck with
Thanks
that.
Thanks for joining us,
Let
Bob.
Us know how that works out. I love a lot of people are in that point right now.
Yeah.
Can I keep it? Should I keep it? Do I have room? Do I want to keep it?
You know? Do I want to keep
yeah,
it?
And yeah, because these are not inexpensive plants, a lot of these tropicals. I mean, and some of them are so beautiful, you don't want to give them up because you want them for next year.
Exactly. Well, let's see what's happening right here around the corner from Toronto. It's Liz online. Good morning, Liz.
Good morning. How is everybody this morning?
Excellent.
Great. I called in the summer about my Gerber daisy, which had flowered after 4 years, which was amazing. And now the flower is gone, and I just have lots and lots of leaves. So I'm just wondering what I can do or what I should do for the winter.
Yeah.
Do I bring it back inside?
Yeah,
or?
Similar to our last caller. Gerberas are originally from South Africa. They are not tolerant of frost. So if you wanted to keep that plant alive, the only way you will do so is by bringing it indoors.
Okay.
Do put it in a very sunny location. I would recommend watering from below, like a saucer below is where the watering should take place, just because they do have a real tendency to end up with some mildews in the center of the plant if we're watering into the top part of the plant.
Right, and that's how I've been watering it before.
Yeah. Yeah, so when you bring it in, just because, you know, outside we've got some air circulate, you know, wind and that sort of thing, so we don't typically see the mildews as much, but indoors, you know, dead air, the only wind blowing is your furnace, so, you know, hot, dry air, none of that is good on the plant. So try and sort of keep it the moisture from below and lots of sun.
And I should bring it in now?
Anytime. Well, you know, according to the Farmer's Almanac, we're going to have some flurries by the end of the month. So you do have time. But I like to, I assume your Gerber's in a bright, open, sunny location right now, outdoors. So
yes, it was. And I've moved it into a shaded area with less wind.
Good. Yep. And so, if you know, depending on when you moved it into that location, it does need to be in that shaded, sheltered spot for at least a week or 10 days before it comes inside.
Perfect.
Okay.
Excellent. Thank you so much.
Liz.
Thank you, Liz. And have a wonderful weekend. Of course, keeping it tuned right here to AM 740. And that's, of course, 96.7 FM downtown Toronto. We have a few gremlins attacking our phone lines.
Do we?
So, yeah, which meant a couple of folks who had called in kind of got bumped. Nothing that we did, but it just happened. So that means we've got at least one line open now. If you wanted to call in Toronto, 416-360-0740. Anywhere out of the area, it's toll-free at 1-866-740-4740. And here's a little something for Gail in Manotick near Ottawa. Hello, Gail. Welcome to the show, first-time caller.
Good morning, and thank you for the line was busy, but I'm glad I got through.
Good.
Good morning.
Good morning, Charlie. I used to live in the Toronto area, and 4 years ago I moved, so I always enjoyed your morning show.
Nice.
My question is, since I moved to Ottawa, we planted some grapes, and we had a terrible problem with the Japanese beetle. Mm. And when I was in the Hockley Valley area, I popped into a nursery there, and one of the workers suggested planting mint beside the grape plants.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I did, we did that. And then also I found in the store peppermint extract, so I mixed it with some water and tried to spray the leaves, and that seemed to help a bit. But I'm wondering if you have any suggestions.
Hmm. So where you lived... in the just trying to get a sense of, is there any kind of a ravine near you or a schoolyard or a public park or anything like that? Or are you surrounded by neighbors everywhere?
No, I'm actually on the river. I'm on the Rideau River, and a few doors down from me, there is a conservation area.
Hmm. The reason I bring it up is because there is something called a Japanese beetle trap. And sometimes people buy these traps because it's full of pheromones and it attracts the Japanese beetles. They fly into it and they can't get out. So sometimes people will use those to trap Japanese beetles, But the trick is you do not want to put that trap on your property because you will end up getting 50 times more Japanese beetles flying in than you would regularly. But if you have a conservation area or a schoolyard or a parking lot or something where you can surreptitiously hang this trap next spring, then the Japanese beetles will all get attracted to the trap, which will not be on your property, and you will have fewer in your yard.
Ooh,
as a result.
That's clever. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's just a thought. You will need to check the trap on occasion and empty it because they do fill up if it's a bad year for Japanese beetles. Otherwise, I mean, they're just all we've really learned to be able to do is just go out every morning and every afternoon with an empty tuna fish can filled with a bit of water and a drop of oil and pick them off and drown them in the can. So that is the drag of Japanese beetles. That really is. There's no spray. There's no repellent that I know of.
You physically have to do it yourself.
Yeah, and there's certain plants they like more than others. Definitely they love beans. Every time I plant beans, they get annihilated. They love roses. They'll eat every part of these plants that they love. So they seem to love grapes as well, it sounds like.
Gail,
so
I just...
take a tuna can and just fill it with water and some drops of oil?
Yep. Or a drop of soap, either one, because you basically just don't want pure water. They'll just fly out of the water. But a little drop of oil or drop of soap, they can't get out, and they drown, and it's quite pleasant for me.
Do I put it, like, at the base of the grape plant?
No, you really have to walk around and pick them off and drop them in. They won't willingly fly into this tuna fish can, but they're very easy to pick off. They're very slow moving.
Oh, I get it. Okay.
And they're really just the most docile bugs you've ever met in your life.
Okay. Well, thank you so much.
Gail, just before you leave, you're calling from Manotick. Are you bringing us in just via AM 740 or via computer online?
No, I'm bringing you through the cable TV because listen to your station all day. But my husband worked today, so I was up early enough for once on a Saturday to put the show on and listen to it and make my call.
Wonderful.
Yeah, that's great. I listen to the... all of a 740 I have on all day in the house from the moment I get up
through cable
with the Happy Gang and then it's on all day.
Good you for know, you.
I don't do it through the computer though. It's I had a lot of problems with the cable with Rogers, and actually I called in and one of your listeners helped me so that Rogers finally did something, because I said I want this station and
good for
the
you.
Signal is around 9 miles from the tower, so that was my problem.
Wow. But a call of fame right there.
Still, but normally on a Saturday, I'm not up early enough to listen to your show, but when I am, I always have the radio on.
Excellent. Well, thank you.
Thanks so much
Gail
for calling.
Very much. All right.
And remember, if you're not up early enough, because sometimes people aren't, or they're in another time zone, we are podcast.
Yep.
You can always listen to the show. You can listen to past archived shows from years back just by going to Zoomer. Is it zoomerradio.ca? Is our website? I never know.
Just go to AM 740 and it'll bring you right there.
Yeah, go to podcasts.
And then,
choose the Garden Show and choose any week you want.
Exactly. Oh, here's a favorite caller from Holstein. Wilma. Good morning, Wilma.
Good morning. It's not a real good morning here, but we need the rain, too, so we can't complain.
Okay. What's going on at your place?
Well, I have calla lilies. Now, admittedly, I have been a little slack, and I just leave them in the pot put the pot out every summer.
No, that's fine, yep.
In my garden. Mm-hmm. But I do not get any blooms from them.
Mm.
Now, I wonder if it's just because I'm lazy that I haven't repotted them in the pot and I haven't fertilized them,
yeah,
I admit.
I think it's more fertilizer, probably. And you're giving them a fair amount of shade, right?
No, actually, they're out in pretty much sunshine.
Okay. So I would give them a little more, like preferably afternoon shade and morning sun.
Okay.
Definitely don't do it now, but you know, wait till obviously frost's going to knock the leaves down. Do your usual bringing them in the pot. Don't worry about unpotting them or taking them out at all. But next spring, take a look at your soil, because in our pots, we typically use potting soil, and potting soil has no nutritional value. It is peat-based, vermiculite, perlite.
Dries out very quickly.
Yeah, and it's a great medium for growing in pots, but it does not do any feeding. So we really have to either, you know, mix up the water-soluble fertilizer and fertilize by when we water every 2 to 3 weeks, or in the spring, rough up the soil and use a slow release. You incorporate some slow release fertilizer into the soil, into the first top inch, and then add a little bit of fresh soil because it's probably depleted anyway, and then get it out into a place where you've got some bit of sun, or, you know, sort of half day sun, half day shade, and you should get flowers.
Okay.
All right.
Should they be maybe separated? Like what I done this spring, I put them out. I brought them up from the basement earlier before I could put them outside.
Yeah, good idea.
And they grew probably, maybe 8 to 10 inches. And had the green leaves.
Yep.
But even since I put them outside, they don't seem to have even grown in the greenage.
Oh. Hmm. So they look kind of like they looked when you put them out then?
Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe it's, well, if, like you said, if it's the pots dry out really quickly.
Mm-hmm. Now, I did have a tray underneath them, so okay. The water didn't drain totally out of them when it got rain.
How big are the pots?
It's probably a 10-inch pot.
Mm. And when you planted it with the calla lilies, how many did you put in there?
I don't know anymore.
It was years ago. Well, you know, if in doubt, next spring when you pull this pot up from the basement, maybe it's time to dig into it and find out what's in there.
Uh-huh.
If it's really, really overcrowded, yes, it might be wise to do some separating.
Uh-huh.
But more likely, it's not overcrowded, and it was just such a big pot that when you planted, plants are so funny. Like they most particularly bulb plants, any of the, you know, bulbs, tubers, rhizomes, they kind of like to be a bit on the crowded side. They don't, if there's too much soil, then they just grow a lot of roots.
Okay.
They just, because they're going, oh my gosh, like what's going on? You know, they just sort of get overwhelmed by all that soil, and you won't see a lot of top growth. You will find a lot of underground roots.
So they still haven't crowded themselves into growing.
Yeah, so you won't know until you dig them up to see what's really going on. And certainly you could go right back in. If you find that there's lots of soil but not lots of tuber, then I would go right back in. But certainly consider some fresh, amend that soil with some fresh potting soil. Or, you know, some compost even can help if you make compost because, well, you're in Holstein. You've got good access to great compost. So incorporate a little organic material and you will find that that will help hold moisture as well.
Well, being the Scottish background that I am, I have a tendency to say that it probably was just my own garden soil, flower bed soil that I put them in. But I may have put some other with it, but as I say, it's been probably 4 or 5 years, actually, since I'm guessing.
Well, a little amending of any soil after 4 or 5 years is a good idea, and whether you need to separate is hard to say until you pull it all apart.
Yeah.
Thanks for keeping us in touch with the folks in Holstein, Wilma.
Yeah, thanks for
calling. And we'll welcome you back whenever you can. We have to take a little bit of a break here because I'm all set to bring in Josephine from Pickering. We'll do that right after these words on Zoomer Radio.
Fur and feathers and bugs of all size. There's more going on in the garden than you realize. Should small creatures become a big problem, then you've got The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
And Charlie Dobbin, of course, bringing you a little bit of sunshine in this cloudy Saturday morning.
Yes, with my favorite co-host, Franklin Proctor.
Well, thank you very much. Hey, Josephine.
Notice I'm not picking on you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
She's been very good to me. Hasn't hit me once. Josephine in Pickering, good morning.
Good morning. I phoned in earlier, and for some reason or another, my phone was playing tricks on me.
Yeah.
So I couldn't get through to you. I could hear you in a very whisper voice.
Oh, wild. Okay. Well, I'm glad you got back on.
Okay. I'm the pain in the neck that phoned in regards to the hydrangea plant that I started.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if you remember me. I started it from a shoot.
Yep, I do remember.
Okay, now the thing is this. It has got two stems starting, and the leaves are quite big.
Mm-hmm.
However, I want to plant it outside, but should I plant it by where my hydrangeas are in between where it'll be protected for the winter? In that spot there, I have bleeding hearts as well as the hydrangeas.
Mm-hmm. Is that where you ultimately want it to grow?
Yeah.
Okay, so yes, if you are going to plant it into its final location, better to get it outside sooner than later into the ground. I would recommend either a little bone meal when you're planting or some transplanter or root booster kind of fertilizer.
Right.
Just to encourage roots priority. The trick is if we're doing any planting or transplanting we want to make sure we've got these plants in the ground 6 to 8 weeks before the first frost.
Okay.
In order for some roots to get down and so the plant can get slightly established before the ground freezes.
Well, as you know, I've started that off quite a while ago, and it's taken a long time for everything to start to really flourish. But
exactly.
I don't want to lose it at this point, and I figured that if I put it in between the mother plant and another one.
Yeah, it'll be quite cozy.
At least it's in its familiar ground.
Exactly. Everybody will be glad to see it back, probably.
Most likely. I'll be glad to see if it comes back next year.
Well, you should see it through the winter. I mean, remember, those little stems should still, I mean, the leaves will drop, but the little stems should still show above ground.
Oh, I know. You don't touch the stems.
Yeah, and leave everything alone till the spring.
I've had that argument with my sisters and my daughters about that.
Some people, you know, for some people, they just love to do cleanup in the fall.
Well, that's when I do most of my cleanup.
Yeah, and some people, you know, go south for the winter, so they're cleaning up in September, and we haven't even come close to a frost, and they're cutting everything down. It's like, whoa, you know what? It's way better if you can leave the plants alone at least until we've had a good frost.
Now, how big a hole should I dig for that plant?
Twice as wide as the pot, same depth that it is now.
Okay.
Okay, and water thoroughly.
Okay, then.
All right.
It's taking a lot of water.
Let us know how that turns out, Josephine.
It ought to be interesting.
I love experiments.
Thank you. 9:45 here on The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Speaking of going south, we're going to do that right now, too, to the state of New York, just a little bit south of Rochester. There's Bill, and he is a first-time caller.
Oh, welcome to the show.
How's it going, eh?
Excellent, eh?
Throwing a little Canadian.
How y'all doing?
Oh, yeah, we're doing pretty good. Down here. I got a question about blueberry cuttings. I took about 10 blueberry cuttings from my established blueberry bush, and I put some root hormone on them, and I put them into sand, and I got them in containers, and they're outside right now, but, you know, it's going to get cold, and I was wondering if I should be bringing those in for the winter.
Nope. So they do have roots, or have you checked?
No, they don't. I put them into, like, these little cubes that, you know, like little styrofoam cubes.
Yeah.
That's meant for, like, and they have plenty of root hormone, and the sand is moist and stuff, but I was wondering what, you know.
Well, the only way you could bring them indoors would be if you had a very cool spot to put them. That's the challenge. Like most, you don't bring them into room temperature for the winter. That won't work. So, because, yeah, I mean, certainly the way they're propagated, as you have recognized, is by cuttings, and they will be held in virtually, you know, around 0 degrees in cold frames, if you will, those cuttings for months until the roots start to show. And then, of course, they'll be potted up and, you know, the temperatures are all, so we're not having real outdoor extreme temperatures, but we are keeping the plants virtually dormant because they have to as the days get shorter. That's their total natural cycle, and you can't try and pull them out of that.
What I did was I put I took a cooler and I took the top off of it, and I put like a metal screen down so they could drain about an inch below the bottom, and they're all in there. But it gets pretty cold where we are. I'm concerned that it'll be too cold for them in that condition.
So you know what I would do? Did you poke holes in the bottom of that cooler?
Yeah, well, it drains. There's an inch space below the bottom of all the containers, and then it drains out the cooler by the plug.
Oh, okay. So that's, I was going to say, because if we get an inch of water, it would be full of water.
Yeah,
all right,
no,
so
it'll
as long
always
as,
drain. It'll never hold water.
Okay, so is there any possibility you could take that cooler? I mean, depending again on sort of what you've got available, like say you had an unheated shed or something like that, those plants could go into the shed for the winter, which would be
so just out of the wind.
Yeah, and less extreme than outdoor temperatures. You know, be
a
little milder.
Sun? Do they need any?
No,
any
because because they're going to drop their leaves. They're going to go completely dormant. They don't need sun at all for the winter. But you will have to check if you do go into a dark shed or something like that. Do check on them every couple of weeks or month. Just make sure that they're not rotting, because if they're too wet, they could rot. If they're too dry, they'll just shrivel up and die. So there's going to be a fine line on the moisture levels, but they'd be out of the wind, out of the extremes.
No, I don't have to. Yeah. All right. That's
I mean, the only other thing would be to bury the cooler into mm-hmm. the garden, and that will get them down below soil level, and it's always less cold once you get down below ground level, because the soil only goes to 4 degrees. It's a good place to keep things insulated by the soil.
Now, I hedged my bet, and I bought 5 3-year-old blueberry bushes that mm-hmm. haven't arrived yet. I've got the holes dug, and I'm waiting for them. And, you know, we don't expect, I mean, we might get some flurries, but we don't expect any freezes for another six weeks or so. I mean,
yeah.
If I get these in time, are they going to live?
Well, it's only the 1st of October, and, of course, you're a little milder where we are, so you likely do have 6 to 8 weeks still before. I mean, and it's a real hard frost. We're not talking about a light little just, you know, touching 0 or 32 degrees. We're talking about, you know, 27 Fahrenheit minus 3-4 Celsius where we, you know, things all stop. That's it. That's the hard frost. We get the icy layer. So when will that happen? Usually not in October. We're usually well into November before that happens. Last year, it was after Christmas. You know, I had roses blooming until December 27th at my house. So, you know, last year was a very prolonged fall. We were joking that the squirrels were the size of raccoons last year. They had so much time to eat. So they just fattened right up. So who knows what the fall will bring, but I would remain calm and, you know, hope those blueberries show up soon. As soon as they show up, get them in the ground.
Okay, Bill, thank you very much for calling in from New York State, just a little bit south of Rochester.
Yeah.
And we have another first-time caller, actually, Joan in Kitchener, we'll get to in just a moment here on The Garden Show from Zoomer Radio.
Daffodils and daisies, bluebells and begonias, forsythia and foxgloves, marigolds, magnolia, lavender and lupins, dahlias, delphiniums, stocks, fox, hollyhocks, tulips and sweet williams.
You've picked the right place for everything floral. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Well, a big Oktoberfest welcome to Joan in Kitchener, and she is a first-time caller. There you
Ooh,
go.
Ooh, baby,
hi, Joan.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. I have a problem here. Mm-hmm. I was cutting my peonies back, and I noticed on all the stems there was a white powdery film,
mm-hmm.
and I don't know what that is.
Mildew.
Oh, okay, what do I do about it?
Well, so the peonies are, how much sun are they getting?
They get the morning sun.
Okay, so they're getting a couple hours in the morning.
Yes.
And what's happened, so in this afternoon, shade is provided by trees or something, or the house?
No, just the shade of the house.
Yeah. So because they're getting that much shade, and perhaps also they're somewhat protected from a lot of air circulation, you're ending up with some mildew growing on the stems. And it won't ultimately kill the plants, makes them a bit unsightly, and might affect the quality of the flowers moving forward. Any possibility you could move those peonies into a sunnier spot?
You know, we've lived in this house for over 50 years.
Mm-hmm.
And we were giving these plants when we moved here, so
wow.
I don't even know how old they are, but they're very, very old.
They're at least 50
I
years old.
I just don't want to lose them.
No, no. Well, peonies are not that hard to... You've lived in the house for over 50 years. That's got to be a record. You should get a bell ring just for that.
Hey, wait a minute.
Wow. That's amazing. I think I've lived in my place for a long time. I've been there over 20 years.
Oh, my. No, we've been here for a long, long time.
No kidding. Well, all right, so what can you do? See, the thing is that when you planted those peonies 50 years ago, they were maybe 3 or 4 stems came up. But now, 50 years later, you probably have 100 stems
coming off
of each peony. And that's part of what's going on too, right? It's that density of the plant. So that affects the air circulation as well. I mean, really properly, back in early September, and it is a bit of a job because it'd be a huge tuber under there, each of them, to dig them up and to actually break them into smaller pieces, sever them into smaller pieces. You could give some to friends or family and then, you know, go back into the same spot with a smaller tuber. What are you going to do? You know what? Because the only other thing would be, and you don't want to do this, in the spring as the stalks are coming up, you could cut some down so you don't have as many stems coming up.
I hate
that idea, but I mean, you could do that. Otherwise, I mean, did they flower fine this year?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so I mean,
they're beautiful flowers in the early summer.
Yeah, I wouldn't worry about it. So it's in October, you've got a little bit of mildew on the leaves. Who cares? The leaves are going down anyway.
There's nothing I could put on the soil. Is that correct?
No. Well, there is liquid sulfur, which is a fungicidal spray, or there's a product called Serenade, which is also a fungicidal spray. You could pull that out in late July, early August, follow the instructions, and spray the stems, particularly of the plant, just to avoid the mildew. But again, it's a herbaceous plant, so all of that is going to drop down in the fall anyway. Main thing is don't keep that material on your property. Don't try and compost it because you'll keep the fungus.
Okay.
Bag it and send it away.
Thank you very much for your help.
All right. Good luck with that.
Thanks, Joan. And Gully, just as we're kind of winding things up here on The Garden Show, we go from Joan to Joan in Burlington this time around. Hi, Joan.
It's the Joan Show. Good morning.
I was listening to your forecast about flurries at the end of the month, and I thought, I'd better get my Christmas lights up. I won't light them, but I'll get them up. And leading up, because it's going to be cold in November, let's face it, but leading up to Christmas, what can I do to get my Christmas cactus to bloom in December?
Ah, you want it to bloom in December and not November?
I'd like them any time, quite honestly.
Yeah. Okay, so you know what's the trick with Christmas cactus? And your timing is very good. If you want your Christmas cactus to bloom at all, one of the most effective ways to get it to bloom is stop watering it. So just let it do some serious drying down. And it's all about temperature.
Mm-hmm.
If you can take your Christmas cactus outside even today, leave them outside right until we get a light frost, the plant will be covered in buds because of the cool nights and the sunny days.
Uh-huh.
But as soon as you bring that plant into your warm house, all those buds will break and it'll all start flowering and it might not be Christmas yet. So that's always the challenge is we take them outside, they're covered in buds, we bring them in November because it's getting too cold and then they bloom like crazy through November and now we've got green plants at Christmas. So if you can take them out, get the buds set and then bring them into a cool location, sunny but cool in your home, you can slow down the flowering and try and hold them off till Christmas.
Now, if I put them outside, can I put them on the patio right next to the house? Would that be all right? Or do I put them in towards the garden?
No, you can just put them out in the patio. Make sure that they're not going to get really soggy if we're getting a lot of rain. Make sure there's no saucer below so they are draining well.
Yeah.
And, it's all about temperature.
I have been following what you said a while ago about not washing them, letting them get really dry.
Uh-huh. Yep, dry down and cool night temperatures, and your Christmas cactus will reward you with tons of flowers.
Great. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome.
A bright note to end on, as a matter of fact. Thank you, Joan, for that call. And we look forward, of course, to next week talking to you folks again. And, Charlie, what do you got planned today?
Well, breakfast with you.
Well, that's right, yes.
We're off to High Park to our favorite Grenadier restaurant, where I hope they're holding us a good table. And then, actually, I'm going to go home. I've got a handyman friend of mine coming to help me do some handyman repairs.
Ah,
yes,
excellent.
Yes, indeed. So
good
that's my afternoon.
You talked somebody into doing stuff. Good for you.
I know. Delegation. That's my middle name.
Have a good week, everybody. Oh, I'm coming back at 1:30.
Right. You're on air.
Yep. For a couple of hours.
Well, you have a great afternoon and good week. I'll see you. Thank you, Sebastian. Thank you to our wonderful callers. See you all again next week.
This has been an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. This has been an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.